Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents Not Another True Crime Podcast. It's all fun and games until someone gets hurt.
Welcome back to Not Another True Crime Podcast. I'm Sarah Levine.
And I'm Danny Murphy. You know, we're your partners in wine, crime, and time because we're with you for the next hour talking about some crazy stuff.
Yes. Also, I had a couple of you guys reach out telling me to get well after COVID, which was so sweet. So thank you. And someone... One of the fans recommended this wild concoction. She was like, it sounds
it's Joe
gross.
Rogan. He's like, wait, yes. Sarah, big fan. Did you try horse tranquilizers?
Honestly, I'll take them at this point. but no, she was like, well, if you lost your taste and smell, like, she's like, you make garlic tea and you put in ginger and like one other thing. And she was like, it's disgusting, but it works. And I was like, what is garlic tea? And she said, you just boil garlic in water. And I'm like, oh, wow. That sounds like a time.
But well, I've heard. Did you try it?
Oh, no. Because I'd already gotten my smell and taste back by that point. But
I was going to say, sometimes if you're like having a sore throat or you feel an itch coming, like chewing raw garlic does help you out a little bit.
Really?
I don't know. I also love garlic in any form, so that might just be my So
I do. I love that you're just like chewing on garlic like it's an Altoid or something.
I'm like, but like my medicine is like, wait, Sarah, you lost your taste and smell. You should get garlic cheesy bread from Domino's. It'll help.
I mean,
help.
That's what I would do.
There's no tea involved, but I mean, you will sweat. You'll sweat it out.
Amazing. Also, everybody, on another note, we are doing another live show.
Woo!
Yeah.
We will be talking about it until it sells out. So just buy your tickets if you want us to cut right to the...
And posting about it. So if you want us to stop spamming, just buy your ticket already. But it's at June 5th, which is a Sunday, in Union Hall in Brooklyn. We performed there 2 years ago at this point, which is crazy. But it was a great time.
It was so much fun. Yeah, we hope to see you guys there. It's at 5 p.m., I want to say. So, like, get brunch before and come, or wake up at 3 and just come over. You know, it's a perfect Sunday ritual. And then also, it's like, you have the rest of your day.
That is a great time, honestly. Just do brunch and then come to the show. You'll be nice and loose and hopefully not belligerent. Yes.
I mean, you can be. You can be belligerent in a fun way. I don't.
Yes. Yeah. So, get your tickets, betches.co/NATC live, and we'll see you there.
Yay. Oh my God, exciting.
See there. So I guess without further ado, we can get into today's case.
Yes. It is one that I feel a lot of people have reached out about because it was like popping up in the news a lot and there was a documentary about it. So we had to go for it.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about the murders at Starved Rock, which honestly sounds like a fictional movie title, but I'm into it.
Oh, right. Well, because even at the kickoff of the documentary, when he was like, they were talking the history about Starved Rock. It's like, there were soldiers there and they surrounded them and they couldn't leave. So they starved. And the guy was like, isn't that a myth? And then the person I think was like, isn't everything a myth? And I'm like, what am I? I was like, am I watching Succession?
Okay, but
I'm like, what is the plot here? But then they got to it.
Is it everything a myth?
I'm like, what is happening?
Like, sort of, but also like, is this one like, what?
Yeah.
That's so funny. So it's a docuseries. It's on HBO / HBO Max. They're the same to me because I don't have a television. But I thought it was a pretty good watch. It was very interesting. Definitely some quirks, which I feel like we could talk about at the end or we could talk about it now.
We'll give everyone the synopsis in case they don't know, and then we can quirk it up at the end.
Okay, I love that.
Because honestly, the thing is with like this case, even the documentary show, it is kind of, I mean... The trial crime case part of it gets open and shut pretty fast. And the documentary, well, it's kind of the more open-endedness of where the director goes after.
Totally, totally. So it happened, not that the documentary is based on, but it's surrounded, I don't even know how to say this, migraine brain. Yes, last week it was COVID brain, then it's migraine brain.
Shout out to any person with, like me and Sarah, dealing with the worst allergy season. I want to say,
my God,
in recent history, I have not had an allergy attack like this since I, like, literally 2014. Like, I don't know. It's in full swing.
Yeah, crazy. But so at the center of this documentary is these real murders at a place called Starved Rock State Park, which is in LaSalle County, Illinois. So here's what happened with these murders. In March of 1960, three women named Frances Murphy, Mildred Lindquist, and Lillian Oting. How was that? Oting. Nailed it. So these three women went on a four-day trip together to Starved Rock State Park. All was well, but on March 14th, they checked into their room at the Starved Rock Lodge, laid down their luggage there before deciding to go on an afternoon hike through St. Louis Canyon. I already don't like the sound of this. I'm like, yeah, it's a hike. No.
It's, yeah. Morgan Murphy, the comedian, has a bit where she's like, on all the crime docs, she's like, I have gone on zero jogs, people. If someone says in a crime doc that I was out jogging, they kidnapped me. And I think that is, I definitely relate to that.
That's me with the hike. Like, my sister lives in Boulder and is always like, oh, come visit. We'll go on a hike. And I'm like, ugh.
The weirdest
it's
thing.
It's more about the laziness than not wanting to get murdered, but you know.
I hate jogging, but I love a hike because you can like look at, like, you can hear birds. I don't know why.
That's true. I don't know. I guess because hikes are leisurely, but in my head, they're like shadily really tough.
Depends on who puts you on the hike. Because there's some people like, oh, it's a cute little walk around a park. And I'm like, why am I like bouldering?
Exactly.
Why do I have vertigo now? Yeah.
Exactly. I've gone on a hike where everyone's like, oh yeah, this should be a pretty doable hike. And I'm like, cool. I work out, but I am out of breath and I don't like this. And all of you guys are fine. Like, what?
Totally.
But in any case, they go on their afternoon hike. And then they go missing, but it wasn't even until 2 days later that anyone realized that they were missing, because Francis's husband called the lodge on March 16th and asked about his wife because he said she should have called by then. And
also this was like, now I feel like it's like the Abercrombie and Fitch doc, which like maybe we can cover later when they're trying to explain a mall. I was like, oh yeah, because it's
oh
not
my
like,
God. So fucking
you're like,
funny.
I was like 2 days later, but of course, like it's the 60s. You're not like texting someone, hey, got to the hotel. It's like phones aren't, you like, that's a normal duration of time. Cause that was my first, maybe I'm just really dumb. I was like, 2 days you're waiting for your wife to call. But I was like, it's a trip. They don't have like phones.
Oh yeah. I guess my thought was like 2 days isn't that long. Cause I feel like we've definitely covered cases where people have gone missing for a long time, but
100%.
Yeah.
I'm just codependent when I travel.
I know. It's so funny. So it was at this time that they found out all their luggage had been left untouched in the room. And they also realized a snowstorm had covered the car in snow, meaning they didn't drive anywhere. Also, not a good time to take a hike. I'm just saying.
No. Well, that's what I was confused because it said it snowed in the dock. And I was like, I was trying to Google like the weather of that. And the Chicago Tribune did not really lace it. But then I was like, okay. I mean, I guess it snowed in Pasadena.
Interesting. So police organized a search of the park and they found the women's bodies bound with twine and partially disrobed inside a cave in the canyon. And all the women suffered severe head trauma from a tree limb that was found nearby that they determined to be the murder weapon.
Yeah. And so it was a very intense, graphic way all these women were found. And kind of almost immediately then that gave a lot of attention to the case and police were really looking for answers. And they immediately turned to the Starved Rock Lodge as a source of possible suspects, mainly because these three women weren't locals to the area. So that was the only connection they had there before their murders, where it's like, okay, they were staying at this lodge. People saw them drop off their bags and then leaving on like just going on a hike in a new-ish.
Right. Cause like who else is, I mean, unless the killer could have just happened upon them, but it's also like who would really know that they had left to go on this hike?
Exactly. So the spouses of the victims put up a reward for $30,000 for information for the crime, which is almost like $300,000 today. Cause they were all wealthy. And I mean, of course you need answers. You want answers. Many, many people were interviewed by the police, but one employee stood out from the rest, like from like the first second they met him, Chester Weger, who worked as a dishwasher at the kitchen of the lodge. multiple employees. This is kind of also, so like they had him ID'd and a background on him. I know his sister said in the documentary too, like they were kind of like a lower class family who all kind of worked with this family who was at the lodge, everything like that. Multiple employees said that he came to work the day after the attack with scratches on his face. We'll get into what he said about that later. And also, the type of twine that the victims were bound in was found in the kitchen of the lodge, which was potentially incriminating. I personally don't know how many different types of twine exist. But
that's a good point.
When they were like, the kitchen uses this twine, I was like, I mean, I have not been to a Home Depot in who knows when, but I did not know there was that much variety in a twine.
That's so true. Oh, man.
Like, but they kind of, I mean, also, I mean, we can touch on this later. This was, this crime was committed in a very political time for everybody with re-elections and trying to get some, like, crimes and everything like that. So
it's crazy how, just how political, like, solving crime can be. Like, when we talked about the Betsy Faria murder and, like, how, you know, the DA was pushing and all these things and, like, when they kind of shit the bed, everybody involved with that case like didn't get reelected.
Right? It is insane. It's kind of like people are like, because the guy was even saying, he's like, you either catch him really fast and people are like, oh, you're just looking for an answer, or you don't catch, you catch him too slow, you know? And then so people are just trying to like have a public persona, the public believe you and trust you, but then in so doing that, are you doing things that are not trustful?
Right. But I feel like that's why public pressure can be so like important to move cases along at the same time.
Oh, 1,000%, because otherwise they just sit cold.
Yeah.
So he was questioned for like weeks on ends. He took a few, he took like 3 lie detector tests, I want to say, and passed. And they kept trying to like peg him to past crimes like rape at a park where also Twine was involved. And the girl identified him. People have said that this was like set up. And I think he even, in the documentary, Chester even said this was when he found a girl who was assaulted and like walked her home and then like something like that. And yeah, so he did ultimately.
Like those so they were IDs kind of really, can be so like so suspect though.
Right. Well, then also because there was one time they had him do the lineup and it was like him and he was 22 years old at the time and like 5 50-year-old men. And it's sort of like, okay, well,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like also the police will be like, wink, wink, like, you know?
Oh, 100%. And so he ultimately ended up failing a lie detector test in September. So they were able to catch him on that. And then 8 months later, he confessed to being guilty.
But that's so crazy because that's after months. And also, those aren't admissible in court.
Exactly. Yeah, no,
like,
exactly.
I think
and
if
also,
the police are calling you into questioning enough times, like you're going to fail a lie detector test, I feel like.
Yeah, because it's just like very shoddy. And also we get into there. They were doing a lot of less than ideal ways of questioning him, which I mean is very happens a lot and part of the course, unfortunately, but like kind of like breaking him down. So the morning after the confession, they asked him to go down to the site of the murders and reenact how everything had gone down. He did. He claimed that he only planned on robbing them, but as he was leaving, one of the women broke free and started hitting him with a pair of binoculars. So he grabbed a log from the ground and beat her.
Right, because you know who carries a lot of money? People on a hike. Huh?
Do you know what I mean? Also, all their purses and everything was in the room.
Right.
And then after that, he went back and ultimately killed the other two women. And this is when everybody's like, how did like this one guy, the logistics of that all happening, like he killed one woman then ran over to so after the reenactment he confessed again and signed pages of a written confession, but days later he recanted this said confession, saying it was made under duress, like he was threatened by the police under the interrogation, like they were telling him like, if you don't confess, we're gonna like have circumstantial evidence and you're gonna get the electric chair. They kept on threatening.
Oh, right.
I think they said you're gonna ride lightning. Like they said that like 6 times and everything like that. They were really threatening.
Don't make
that.
It sound fun.
I mean, ride lightning. Yeah. It was very intense, very intense. He also said that he didn't talk to a lawyer or an attorney when he signed it because he thought he was saving his life because he was like, okay, either sign this or I get death penalty. So a grand jury had him, like, there was, like, against him for all, returned indictments about against him for all three murders and the rape, but he was only tried for the murder of Lillian Odding, and the trial began on February 13th, 1961. His defense did try to claim and fight that he, the investigators were relentless in extracting a confession from him, and they kept saying that if he didn't confess, there would be the circumstantial evidence and he would get the death penalty. And part of his alibi was that he was alone writing a letter to a woman he was in love with that was not his wife. But he did this alibi because his friend who testified who he was with lied on the stand, which he said that he lied on the stand, because he was getting a, his first alibi was that he was getting a haircut at the time of the murders and the scratches were from shaving, which I do relate to because a clean shave is hard to do. And I'm trying to get back into that. And that's, it's just, it's scratches happen.
But was he getting a haircut?
Well, one of his friends in the friend wasn't in the documentary, but this girl who worked at a restaurant who passed the friend, because this is all like small town, everyone is just talking to everybody. Chester was going to use him as his alibi because he was with him allegedly. But when the guy took the stage, when the guy took the stand, he said, "No, I wasn't." And then told this girl, "They told me I had to lie, or else they would like get me for something." So like,
oh boy,
something like that. So that did not help him. That guy could not help him at all. They also found splatter of blood on Chester's jacket. That still hasn't been proven what type of blood, but they said it was human blood, even though, like, even later on, people were like, is it animal blood? Is it human blood? Another detail that seemed really unexplainable during the reenactment was that he mentioned that the reason he moved the bodies to the cave was that he saw a red and white plane flying overhead and didn't want the bodies to be spotted in the air, like, from the air. And a lot of people were like, why would that be that when you're in a place where people hike? Like, if you're in a plane, you're not really going to see all that and everything like that.
I kind of feel like you wouldn't be able to see bodies from a plane unless you're flying really low.
No, you know what I mean? Like, it's very, yeah, but here's the thing. And I mean, this comes all to people kind of thinking that it was more of maybe a forced confession or something like that. Prosecutors were able to find the owner of the plane and confirm that he flew it over the park on March 14th. So how could Chester have known that if he just made up the whole confession? And it's like, did they tell him to do that because they knew that plane was there? Or
I don't know. Maybe he did it.
Maybe he did it. Exactly. Did he see the plane? Dun, 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 dun. So there was a lot. Regardless, there was 900 things stacked against him. The results did not take long, and on March 3rd, less than a month after the trial began, the jury gave him a guilty verdict and a life sentence, rejecting the death sentence. There was like one juror who was really against that, so then they just gave him the life sentence. And he was in prison for, I mean, we'll get into all of that. He started serving his sentence there, but that kind of was just like where the doc started, because a lot of people in this town, and now I guess because of this documentary Beyond, are split on thinking if he did it or if he was set up, or like, was it just the easy answer and everything like that.
So I feel like in this town, this became like almost a lore of like Chester Uyghur and the murders at Starved Rock. And people were really divided over whether he was actually guilty or not. And Uyghur continued to profess his innocence from behind bars. So cut to this documentary, Murders at Starved Rock. It's directed by Jody McVeigh Schultz. And one of the main people involved is David Reculia. And he's the son of Anthony Reculia, who's now dead. But that sounded harsh. He is now deceased. But Anthony was the prosecutor who got Chester convicted in 1961. And David started working on this documentary because he says the case haunted his childhood and he wanted to find the truth of what happened, since so many people had doubts of Chester's guilt. Yeah, I didn't get the impression that a lot of people had doubts. Like, the impression that it was an unpopular opinion to have doubts.
It was literally him and then so many people were interviewed from a Facebook page.
Yeah. So,
which I mean, if we ever make a documentary, you best believe I'm only interviewing people from Not Another True Crime group.
Oh,
but,
duh.
not like, it was very, cause I was like, oh, are there going to be like journalists and like people that are like debating the case? And like the Chicago Tribune wrote so much and covered so much about this. And that's where, if you want more information than we have. A lot of the information is there. Support your local newspapers. But there was very much not like circumstantial evidence that people were using to like support their belief.
Right. It seems like, I don't know, I kind of feel like at this point in time, like people were happy to just accept the narrative that the DA kind of built for them. And like, I don't think there was this culture of questioning the police or questioning police work and convictions. You know, I think that is a little bit more, I don't know, widespread now because of like the popularity of all these true crime cases that got it wrong and things like that.
Well, that's what they were even saying. They were, because they were like talking about how like the culture of it all now and like, oh, everything's being over. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But so David interviewed his father and tons of people from the town who'd been involved in the case one way or another. And I mean, you could tell that this really created like some rift, like a real rift between him and his father, because his dad really didn't understand like why he was doing this. Also, this guy was like not a journalist. Like he was just a regular guy. And not that you have to be one to make a documentary, you don't. But it's just like, you are really not involved in this at all, and you're blowing up your relationship with your dad over this random case. Like, I don't know. That part was wild to me.
Two things I feel me and Sarah both agree. If you watch this and you're like, I want to do this to one of my parents, go to therapy. Like, therapy would help because don't rent the camera. Use your insurance. But also, wasn't it like he was trying to do a documentary or like a movie about himself and his relation to the crime, but then like that wasn't picking up anything, and then he was like,
yeah, because his relation is like none. He's like, oh, none. I used to have nightmares about Chester Uyghur, and it's like,
yeah,
okay.
I had nightmares about Chucky and Chuck E. Cheese's.
Yeah, like exactly. It's just like, okay, this is like, you really have, it gives me vibes of like this, do you remember that viral EXO Jane essay that was like, it happened to me, my friend became an ISIS soldier?
Oh my God. Where it's
like, that didn't happen to you at all. Like,
no, that did not, that was not the case. Oh, XO Jane. What a deep throwback.
A deep cut.
Wow. Okay.
But so David even went to interview Chester himself in prison during which time Chester broke down and said he'd been framed and the state had ruined his life. And the interview made David start doubting the case himself, and so he started looking for evidence that Chester was innocent. He spent the next 10 years doing that. Holy smokes.
I kept getting shocked when they would flash the year, and I was like, is this footage? I was like, this is footage from him? This has been what he's been doing. Yeah.
My God. I can't stick with a hobby that long.
God, no. Oh my God, just walking around with a camp? No. Oh
my God. We research one case a week. I'm like, this is enough.
And I'm like, whoo.
Yeah.
Hooped.
I'm like, never think about that again. Oh my gosh. So in the documentary, they argued that the evidence isn't really there to prove his guilt. And also some signs point to other potential people. So, I mean, they discuss a lot of things, but one of them being like, how did this lanky guy manage to overpower three women all by himself, like all at the same time?
Yeah, very, like, very intense. Even if the women weren't familiar with the woods area, like, it was a very confusing thing.
Yeah, and then they looked at the cops who handled the investigation, Bill Dummett and Harland Warren, and apparently they had a reputation for being crooked, and they found a letter that Warren supposedly wrote while drunk. Yeah, when I'm drunk, you'll just find me writing letters. Like, what?
I mean,
I can barely sign a check.
The only two people I know who have done this then are him and Snooki. Dear Sammy. Yeah.
Facts. Oh my God. So while he was drunk, he wrote this letter outlining how they would get Chester to confess using psychological warfare.
Ooh.
Yeesh. And it came out that Chester was kept away for 24 hours and physically punished before the confession, which is warfare, in fact. Like, that is a torture tactic. Oh, or just a regular day for me, but whatever. So
their insomnia hits hard.
I know. So Chester also alleged that he was coached during the reenactment and told what to say. And as far as that red and white plane, well, Bill Dummett was a member of the local plane club, and he had knowledge of flights and who owned which plane.
A member of the LPC.
Yeah, the FIAC casual. It's like the yacht club, but not.
Truly.
Also, the cops took the reward money that was offered up for information for the case. Like, that's not supposed to go to you.
Yeah, I think they said we're not going to use it, but it's like, where? What are you? What's going?
Why did you get it? Like, that's your job.
Yeah, exactly.
And then this was like the weirdest thing too. So there was this guy who was this family that owned the Star Rock Lodge. I heard everybody say Spiros, but also Spiros. But I'm going to go with these people have never met a Greek person before because I feel like it's Spiros. Like, I'm just going to say that much. I think it is Spiros, too.
They're cool. Like, I got the Spiros Gyro. Yeah.
Exactly. That it gave me those vibes. And I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go with Spiros. But anyway, so this guy, George Spiros, who is the son of the owner of the Starved Rock Lodge, could have been a culprit. One woman who worked at the inn said George enjoyed harassing and inducing fear in women. And that was, her name was Deidre Fox. And then Deidre also went on to recount a time when George locked her in a cabin at the lodge with barking dogs. And she feels that the dogs could have been used in the attack on the women because apparently there were dog prints in the snow.
Yeah, I remember she was like, the second I saw those dog prints, I knew it was George. And I was like, what?
Interesting.
Yeah.
So Spiros initially was looked at for the murders, but he was the one who actually sent investigators to Chuck. And Chester's former public defender filed a clemency hearing request in 2005, where she cast suspicion on George. But 2 weeks later, he was found dead by suicide, and also he killed his dog.
Why did we have to include that part?
What? For me. And I mean, his family said that he killed himself because of a cancer diagnosis. He was 73. And here's another person that they said could have been the killer or one of them. A guy by the name of Smokey. What is that last name?
I think it's Smokey Rona. When I saw, I was like, they lost me. When the documentary cut to a woman being interviewed on Facebook Live in front of a pickup truck, and she was like, my brother's Smokey. I was like, where? I was like, did I land on like my newsfeed, my Jersey newsfeed? I'm like, where are, oh, I'm still on HBO Max. Okay.
My God. So Smokey's sister said that before he died in 2005, he told her he was involved in the murders and Chester had nothing to do with them. This is according to Chicago Magazine. This has never been verified, but as Danny said, she did a Facebook Live about it.
She was there.
He was allegedly linked to 13 murders, but like none of this seems verified, so I don't really know. One of the theories was that one of the woman's husbands was having an affair with Francis's the secretary,
yeah,
and then got her pregnant and wanted a divorce and hired Smokey to kill his wife, but like also his friends, and while they were on vacation somewhere else, like that just seems like a lot. I don't know.
Because it was weird because they kept always saying whenever there was like a crime, they'd be like, we asked Smokey about it. And I'm like, but was he doing it or did they just talk to him? It didn't, none of it really, the documentary did have all these theories, but none of it really held water. And I feel that's what the second episode was all about, kind of like these things and right. Just kind of like questioning like what they can do and how they could change it.
I feel like nobody seems like a good... Nobody seems like a great suspect for this. Like everything seems like off.
Well, also because the main question or missing link to it is that most people I feel like do agree that this was a two person or a more than one person job because it was three victims and everything like that. So there's that element, but all we know is where we are. There's kind of what has happened in the past few years with this case. So on November 29th, 2018, he fell one vote short of parole after a split vote. And then a year later, and this was filmed, this parole hearing, a year later, he was granted release after 59 years in prison. Because I Googled one of the longest prison terms served.
Wow.
They were saying, oh, I hate that I didn't write down the name. But it was after one of the main fighters against him died. So then they kind of like, he just got paroled from that. Hmm. So he was released to a Chicago mission that aids parolees with rehab. And after a 90-day delay, as the Illinois Attorney General gave an evaluation of him, he was released on February 21st, 2020.
No. And
if we all know, I mean, February 21st, 2020, I was thinking, oh, life is good. I'm like, oh, we just did our live show, I think, February 21st, 2020. And we were like, oh, my God. Or maybe it was January 2020. But we were like, yeah. Okay, everything's happening. And
I feel like Chester, we were kind of like, things are fine. I don't know what's going on in China, but that's not our problem. And then, a month later, it was like, surprise, boom. Bitch. Not even a surprise. We should have known.
We should have known. Like everything was there, but we did not. And he did not. And then he got COVID, he lived, and now he is I guess straight chilling, but he now has the chance of being exonerated. And that is kind of what I mean, we'll see. I don't know if he could be, but an Illinois attorney thinks so.
Yes. So this attorney, Andy Hale, thinks that DNA evidence might help exonerate Chester after he was paroled in 2020. By the way, at the age of 83, this attorney, Andy Hale, became interested in the case. And that's because he had represented this guy named Clive Heidelberg, who was convicted in 1970 of a murder that ended up being vacated in 2017 after he spent more than 47 years in prison. And, I mean, he died before his case could be brought back for a new trial. But basically, Hale noticed a lot of similarities between the two cases. So he moved to examine surviving evidence from the 1960 murder, the Starved Rock murders. And after overcoming an objection raised by the Will County State's Attorney's Office, Hale said a judge gave him permission to obtain the evidence and have it forensically examined and cataloged by a third-party firm called Microtrace.
He was really passionate about this. Like, he sent Chester a letter saying, like, I want to help you.
Yeah, I feel like it was pretty – there were, like, a lot of similarities, maybe in, like, the police and, like, the confessions and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So then after kind of going at it with the prosecutors again, Hale won approval to send evidence to another lab, Bode Technology, in Virginia for DNA testing. So he said he took 8 pieces of evidence, hair evidence, twine, and cigarette butts. And basically he says, my position is if there's no Chester Weaker DNA on any of that, this conviction needs to be vacated. And this all happened in March of this year. He hopes to have the DNA test results by like May, which could be next month. So, I mean, we might see. I mean, in the meantime, they're launching a podcast to reexamine the case.
It's been launched. And I was excellent. Like, that made me go, I mean, and I know we are actively doing a podcast, but I am not actively a lawyer with this case. So I think it's kind of weird.
Oh my God.
That
it's like,
he is doing a case about that. Like, new episode dropped on Wednesday, I think.
Oh my God.
So he is actively releasing. Let's get him on. Maybe. Like doing like cases by cases. And like, I think the last episode, because I was like, should I listen to this before this? And I was like, I don't know if I need to listen to like his most recent attorney. Because he's like, Smokey, I don't think so. And I'm like, okay, so what's your end game with all
that's
of this?
That's so funny. Who knows? That's kind of like when doctors are on TikTok. I'm like, shouldn't you be doing medical things? Like,
I ask my brother about that all the time because my brother's a doctor. And I'm like, what do you guys think about the doctors on TikTok? And he's like, I'm literally like in the ER. I don't have time to do a TikTok. I mean, I guess some people, you know, different strokes.
I know. Folks. Yeah. Maybe if you're in like dermatology or something, you probably have more time. I've just heard that that's the most chill section of
it's
medicine.
Also the one that if I did not have insurance, the one that would have the most of my money, because it's the one that I'm always like, I love to go to.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you have the good ointments.
Yeah.
And it's so fun.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I kind of think it could have just been like a random person passing through. This is a state park, you know?
Yeah.
Like they must just get so much foot traffic.
And it's a hard one because it's like when I read about the case before watching the documentary, I was like, oh, he did it. And then when I watched the documentary, I was like, oh, because like the documentary did a really good job. I felt like it was very pointedly advocating for his innocence and everything like that. So I think it is a hard thing. And it did kind of was just good to examine like the political aspects of solving, quote unquote, solving crimes or closing cases more so, I should rather say, and all of that. So I think that was interesting. And I feel like it definitely was more than one person is 100% what I'm leaning towards. I don't know if Chester was one of the people. I
Well, that seems like it would be pretty crazy to be like publicly campaigning for your innocence when you did it. You just did half the murder. Like, what? I don't know.
I would also be like, no, you coming down with me, bitch.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's like one of the things that I think about, like the Adnan Syed case, because I really don't know if he did it. But I'm kind of like, if he did do it again, would he really be like campaigning so publicly for his exoneration?
Because I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but if I was released from prison at the age of like 83, do you think I'd be wasting a single breath trying to like vacate why I was in prison?
Oh my God, I would be like, I'm going to like Yacht Week, bye.
Yeah, I'm going to have every new soda that was invented from the 60s to today.
That would be a bummer because they took out the cocaine. Actually, I don't know if that was in the 60s. You'd be like, wait a second. This sucks
this
now.
This coke sucks. Yeah. Where it's like, that pasta is made of zucchini. He's like, the fuck am I at now?
My God, that's so true. Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, I definitely thought the whole documentary was like, interesting. It's like Murder on Middle Beach vibes, but like what, even one step like removed from the actual crimes, you know?
That one was that one too. Yeah, that, because at least he had a much more of a purpose for that documentary and everything. Yeah, like that,
right? It was like, who killed my mom? But this guy is just like, well,
that one also gave me like, there was like some possible things. So I was like, huh, versus this one I'm just like, who? And it's also the unfortunate thing where it's like, this happened in the 60s, there's no evidence, like there's like, I was all like, oh, is there any camera evidence? No, there weren't, like, no.
Oh my God, imagine. Yeah, no.
The DNA on the, they're like, there's blood on a jacket. What type of blood is it? Who's the blood from? Ooh. And also then it's a hard thing too, because they said every single, like, I think there was even like one guy who was like, worked for a newspaper. He's like, I touched the evidence. Like every single over like 500 people have now touched this evidence. Like we can't use it for anything. So it is kind of just all a wash.
You're just like, that's what you did. You just touched the evidence, tried to get a feel. Like,
just getting the sense of it. It's like Teresa Caputo touching everything. She's like, oh, I got that.
Yeah. Right? Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't even know what to think, but you're right. If I had gotten paroled, I'd be like, all right, bitches. Like, you know, I don't care. Like,
because that's my thing. I would be like, I'm not doing a fucking documentary. I'm not talking to a lawyer. I'm going to rest. Like, so that is kind of what makes me feel like he does have an unanswered situation with this, and it could be his innocence, but it's hard. It's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess we might get updates soon, but for now.
I mean, you're not. Who knows?
Who knows?
And it was good, like, yeah, and then like the filming of all like with his family and everything like that, and then his son went to jail. It was in and out of crime law just because he was so it was like, oh God.
Yeah, cycle. Holy.
Speaking of podcast cycles that we have, we always end with a game, and we'll see what we got going on here.
So, in watching this documentary, I was pretty surprised by the number of legal proceedings that were shown, like all these parole hearings and all the talk about the juries and the trials. So I thought for today we could take a little trip over to Law Land and play a game called Law It or Leave It. And this is how
soon to HGTV.
This is how it's going to work. I'm going to give one of you a question about a very obscure legal term that you will not know, and you will have an option. You can either law it and try to answer the question and tell me what it is, or you can leave it and you can make the other person answer the question.
Well, that's fun.
Here's the catch.
Okay.
When you answer a question correctly, you get 1 point. However, if you answer it incorrectly, you will lose 1 point. If you leave it, you're not going to either gain or lose a point. But, you know, if you're not making points, you're not going to win. So you're going to have to think about this.
This is also hard because I'm always team love it on the show. So I feel like I'm going to have to law it a lot.
Well, we shall find out which strategy prevails. Sarah, you're up first.
Okay.
And your legal term is sui generis. You can either law it or leave it. If you law it, I will give you multiple choice. If you leave it, I'm going to give Danny the multiple choices.
I'm going to try it.
All right, lawing it up. Here we go. All right, here are four options for what sui generis could be. Number one, guilty by association.
Mm-hmm.
B, a general principle. C, an idea which does not fit into a wider concept. Or D, a concept of tort law.
I'm going to go with tort law because I don't know what it is.
That is incorrect, Sarah. You have lost 1 point. Sui generis is a Latin expression that translates to of its own kind. So it refers to anything that is particular to itself. So the correct answer was C, an idea which does not fit into a wider concept.
Wait, so does generous mean kind from Latin?
I believe so. And sui is like unique.
So of its own kind, unique. Oh, I'm sui. Okay, cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, as it stands, Sarah is negative one. Danny is at zero.
No.
I think this is going to be a low scoring game.
This is going to be.
All right, Danny, here is your legal term, jurisprudence. Would you like to law it or leave it?
I'll law it. I just
all right, lawing it up. Here we go. A, theoretical and philosophical study of law. B, any of the core law modules. C, the overarching study of law. Or D, the key statutes used for each area of the law.
I kind of want to go with A.
That is correct, Danny. Well done. You are on the board.
Good job.
Because prudence, pure.
Yeah, jurisprudence derives from the Latin term jurisprudentia, which means the study, knowledge, or science of law. So it generally means like the philosophy of law. Like the core concepts of why law exists and why it's good and like the philosophical way of thinking about law and its effects on society.
Wow. Shout out to anybody listening who went to law school because this shit is hard.
Also, shout outs to you for bearing my terrible pronunciations of these Latin terms. Apologies for that.
I don't think Caesar is going to complain.
All right, Sarah, back to you. Your term is indemnity. Would you like to law it or leave it?
I feel like I should know that word. Let's go.
Sounds like something Teresa Giudice says.
All right, here we go, Sarah.
She's not smart enough to know that word. I'm sorry, Danny.
Oh, I mean, she would be like pronouncing a word wrong.
Oh, okay.
She'd be saying, I'm inside. I'm indemnity right now. Yeah.
Sarah, here are your options. A joint enterprise criminal conviction. B, a promise by one party to compensate another for the loss suffered as a consequence of a specific event. Invalid consideration. Or a sentencing procedure.
I'm going to go with B.
That is correct, Sarah. Well done. You got it right.
She's back.
So indemnity is a comprehensive form of insurance compensation for damages or loss. So it's basically one party agrees to pay another for potential losses that they caused. That is an indemnity. Sarah, you are back at zero.
All right.
Danny is leading with 1 point.
Oh, driving.
And Danny, here is your term.
Fuck.
Demurrer.
Ooh.
You get a law it or
law it? Oh, law it. I'll law it.
Okay, law it. Here we go.
I know what I've heard demurrer before. I don't know what I've heard it in a
So demurrer. So there's an extra ER at the end of demurrer, just so you know.
Well, right. Okay, George Clooney, shout out. ER, okay.
Here are your options. A, an order to bring tangible evidence to court. B, the proclamation of sentencing following a guilty verdict. C, a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. Or D, an action to recover wrongfully taking personal property.
I'm going to do C.
That is correct, Danny. Well done.
Nice.
So demurrer is when you are sued or someone brings a claim against you and you say, even if what you're alleging is true, that is not a crime. So you are failing to state a valid claim.
Oh.
It's like I sue you for eating candy and you're like, even if I did eat that candy, that's not a crime. I can eat candy.
Okay.
Yeah, I love that.
That is a demurrer.
I like that.
That's like kind of what Elizabeth Holmes was doing. Like she was like, well, failing isn't a crime. And everyone's like, no, but you like lied so much in the process.
Fraud is a crime.
And fraud, telling people right.
But she was like, but I didn't do fraud. I just failed to run a company. And it's like, no.
It would be someone being like, I'm suing you for how you danced to Lil Wayne. Not a crime. But what she was planning before that.
All right, Danny, you have 2 points. Zara, you're back at zero. But you were at -1, so you are improving. Upward trajectory. All right, here is your term. Prima facie.
Are you gonna leaving that one.
You're going to leave it. Okay, no, Danny, this goes to you.
Okay.
A, the original declaration of guilt. B, a temporary court order to protect someone from further damage while legal action is pending. C, an agreement between two parties to refrain from doing something. Or D, what can be presumed after the first disclosure. Prima facie.
Shit, I'm torn between A and D. I'm going to do D.
That is correct, Danny. Oh! You are just on a roll.
Wow.
Wow, so I guess I'm a lawyer. It is Latin for
at first look or on its face. So prima facie. So at first glance, first face. So it's what can be assumed after the first disclosure of a case. So you could say something like, at prima facie, this guy is guilty because he is covered in blood.
That's true. Okay.
So after this original statement of the facts, you can sort of assume something.
I got to say, maybe my Latin stuck with me from seventh grade.
Oh, we didn't know that, Danny. You studied Latin in seventh grade?
My teacher in December, when she was 27, which felt so old at the time, she went to Canada for New Year's Eve, never came back. So then we had a substitute for the rest of the school year, and he was a professional dancer, like two-step dancer, something like that. So we just watched his video. So I didn't learn a lot of Latin, but I was in the classroom.
Oh my gosh.
I know Semper Ubi Sub Ubi. She got married. But like a whirlwind romance. She met a guy on the trip and got married then.
How exciting.
Yikes.
Professor Van Buren or Mrs. Van Buren. I don't know what her new married name is, but shout out.
Oh my God, are you okay?
Magistra Van Buren. That meant teacher, I think. Something like that.
Nice.
Well, Danny, you're at 3 points. Sarah's at zero. So you have unofficially won the game. There is one question left. So let's do it just for fun. Sarah, the term is mens rea.
Oh, my God. That means evidence. Come on. Legally Blonde. Let's go.
Well, here are your options.
Boom.
The culpable state of mind. B, a body of laws and legal concepts. C, history of ownership that establishes the present state of a title. Or D, to adhere to precedents of earlier cases as source of law.
Doesn't it mean evidence?
I don't think
Legally Blonde, Legally Blonde wasn't accurate? Had that whole thing? Like, I don't understand. Okay, wait. Do it again. Run it again. Because she talks about mens rea. State of mind. Okay, it could be that.
Olivia Coppola.
Okay.
D, a body of laws and legal concepts. C, history of ownership that establishes the present state of a title, or D, to adhere to precedents of earlier cases as source of law.
I'm going to go with B. That seems the most similar to the context of Legally Blonde.
That is incorrect, Sarah.
Fuck. What is it?
The answer was the culpable state of mind. So mens rea is Latin for a guilty mind.
How could they do this to me? Do you remember this scene, though, when she's like, oh, because of lack of mens rea, which is evidence, and the judge is like, I know what this means, like, proceed. Ah! I'm pissed.
It looks like the movie lied to you, and it lied to all of us.
And not to defend Legally Blonde, Sarah, but I just looked up the line, and it says, first of all, I'd like to point there's no proof in this case, but there's a complete lack of mens rea, which by definition tells us there can be no crime without vicious will.
Oh, there you go.
Hmm. Okay.
So yeah, it is kind of vicious will is like you're in a state of mind to commit a crime. So
just had to defend Reese Witherspoon.
So Sarah, you misremembered the quote and that cost you a point. You have ended the game at -1 points. Danny at 3. So Danny, you are back on your winning ways.
So Danny is a lawyer. Like which law school wants to give him an honorary degree?
Wait.
Hello, NYU?
Officially passed the unofficial bar exam.
The bar class exam. Okay, shout out. Okay, perfect.
So Danny, you are sitting at 6 points. Sarah, you are at 4. So Danny has gotten a little bit of a lead, but I will remind everyone that, Sarah, you started winning off the first four games of this championship. And Danny has come back.
It's true. Anybody's game.
It's anybody's game. Anybody's game.
Anybody's game.
Well, that was fun.
I know.
Humbling.
Well, I mean, it's okay. You don't need to, like, Latin, you know, it's not for everybody. Latin laws are for everybody.
Facts.
But thank you guys so much for listening. Obviously, let us know your thoughts at the Facebook group, Not Another True Crime group. We are going to do, now we're doing every time an episode drops, we're going to do a little thread about the episode and the case. So if you want to have any thoughts or opinions or things about that, it'll be in there. And you can also always DM Not Another True Crime on Instagram. I'm at Kashmir Danny, Kashmir with a K on Instagram.
I'm at Sarah Lameem, and please buy tickets to our live show, betches.co/NATC Live. We'll see you there on June 5th. Jorge will be there.
I'll be there.
Right?
Woo! I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun.
All right. Party. So we'll see you guys then, and we'll be back next week.
Not Another True Crime Podcast is produced by Jorge Morales Pico and Sean Kilby. Our hosts are Sarah Levine and Danny Murphy. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Sarah Levine. Be sure to follow at NATC Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to natc@betches.com. Betches.